This is why we love racing in all its forms.
Fowler Clare kicks. Fowler Clare spot it for Australia. They're on top of the world.
Bling It On from Colt 31. And Bling It On. The comeback boys done it. Bling It On first.
It's still Rajasthan in front. And Rajasthan wins the Sandown Cup.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
And good morning, everyone. We've got a terrific show ahead of us this morning. Welcome to Cracking the Codes. Big, big race day. One of the huge race days at Randwick today. It's great to have Matt Stewart and Simone Fisher joining me once again. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Daniel. Simone.
Matt, it is one of the big race days, isn't it? And we've got a bit of a theme going through Cracking the Codes this morning. We'll be talking to Pat Carey, and we'll be talking to a Hall of Fame trainer as well.
Looking forward to those mystery guests. Pat Carey, of course, will reveal our hand there, and so we're going to talk to Pat Carey about Ethiopia's maiden win in the Derby. And I know you've got a really special guest coming up who straddles two codes, but I don't know who it is. So I'll have to find out along with everyone else. And just as you were saying, like the irony of the crowdless racing at the moment is that the racing itself has been quite extraordinary, and this is one of the best first days of the championships I think I've ever seen. The TJ is incredible, the Derby's great, the Doncaster's great, so we can just sit back on our couches today and enjoy it after we enjoy the next hour.
And Simone, also a bit of a reflection. There's a few things that we're looking at that sort of goes back to the 70s and early 80s, and that also fits in with our guest this morning, and more so the greyhound that we're going to be talking about.
It certainly does. We do have that 70s theme happening. I think we might need some Austin Powers music somewhere in the show as well. But I've got Paul Hilly joining us this morning, and he is the son of the late Joe Hilly. Joe passed away just recently, but anyone that remembers Joe Hilly will no doubt remember Tangaloa, Hall of Fame Greyhound, 1978 Melbourne Cup winner and 1980 Australian Cup winner. So really looking forward to taking a trip down memory lane, speaking to Paul about his late father, Joe.
Of course, Tangaloa was by the great Tim Lee and produced as a sire some fantastic greyhound. I remember Tengen amongst many successes that the horse had in a very, very, the greyhound had in a very successful siring career. Matt, we mentioned Derby Day at Randwick. Conjures up some famous and infamous AJC derbies over the years.
And probably, I think you might have a replay, probably one more than others. I remember going to so many AJC derbies when I was working at the paper, and, you know, you'd look forward to the day, and it was Saturday and Monday back those days. It was usually always hot and sultry and wet. Then they built the new grandstand with all the tunnelling and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I've sort of seen a few flash by me derbies and first days of championships and as it was in the old days. And, and the one with Octagonal Saint Lee, Nothing Like a Dane Falante, is probably the one that stands out for a group of wonderful three-year-olds just sort of slogging it out. But, I could go on forever. But I know you've got one in particular that you've plucked from the vault.
Well, of course, we could refer to the leg-pulling incident with Mel Shoemaker in 1961. That was famous enough, wasn't it? There was a protest there, and it was overturned. And there's another very famous protest incident. We'll go back to 1979 and the clash between Double Century and Dulcify.
Up the rise, Korea, the leader from Lord Folkestone. On the outside, Double Century and Cafe joining in. And here comes Dulcify down the extreme outside. Double Century got to the lead at the 200. Dulcify is the one to go out after him. Double Century and Dulcify, they're right out in the middle of the track. Double Century running out. He flattened Dulcify. Double Century in front. He wins the derby from Dulcify, but there'll be a protest for sure. A three-way go for third. March to Glory, Brandy, Sipple or Cafe.
And there was a protest for sure, Matt. And Simone, and the protest was upheld, so Dulcify took out the AJC Derby, winning it from another great horse in Double Century. They had some wonderful clashes.
Simone, it's I always, you know, when you forget what sport you're watching sometimes, which code, and I sometimes watch greyhound races where my dog cops a massive check and runs second, and the first thing I think of is, oh, well, they'll protest. So the difference is with jockeys on them, back in the monkey riding days, maybe they could have thrown in protest, but... Yeah, the greyhounds, it doesn't matter, but in the gallops, you can always take it to the stewards, and that's what they did with Dulcify.
That was a rough race at the end there, wasn't it? It really was, and when I watched that replay, I thought exactly the same thing, Matt. I thought, oh, if this is in the greyhounds, that's just how it is. There's no human interference at all. It's just pure racing, but you always have that up your sleeve, I guess, in the thoroughbreds there, and yeah, greyhounds, we don't have the luxury, unfortunately.
Are you still in the Rolls Royce caravan?
No, I'm back in the land of the living. So I'm actually sleeping well at night now, not lined up against parallel to the dog shed. I was about 2 metres away, so I could hear them during the night if they decided they wanted to have a bit of a howl or a bark or if they're moving around in their kennel. So no, all back to normal here.
What about you, Dan? How are you coping through this period?
Look, while the racing's been on, and all codes for that matter, I found it terrific. It, for a lot of people, it would be the necessary distraction that makes it enjoyable and exercises their mind as well. I mean, I think that's the problem a lot of people are going to face is psychologically not being able to exercise their mind, particularly with live sport. Anyone that's listening to this program, the theme through it will be the love of the horse or sports. So to take that away from your life is something that will be very, very difficult to get used to.
What I've been noticing is so many people are furiously and frantically exercising, like they're imagining that the shutdown will come where we can't leave our homes or something, and everyone's just charging around in Lycra at the moment. Simone, one thing that was interesting, Alan Clayton and Peter Duncan were on the radio during the week talking about the resilience of the greyhound community in their adherence to the protocols and all that sort of thing. And with the isolation of greyhound kennels, the lack of human interaction as far as no jockeys and so on, even if horse racing has to succumb, you know, and we suspend horse racing for whatever reason, there's still probably going to be a good case that the greyhounds can continue. Is that the sentiment in greyhound racing, that if anything is to stay because of the nature of it, it might be greyhound racing through this period?
For sure. So it's a case, I think, of hope for the best, prepare for the worst. But people, I must say, Matt and Dan, that I was at the Meadows on Saturday night, and there's this unwritten law now. We are all so respectful. People are very mindful of being too close to other people. It's a very strange sort of a thing not to be going up into the grandstand and eating as a community, I guess you could say. People are sitting in their cars. They've bought their own dinner. But everyone is just complying. They're so respectful. We all know that we just need to continue racing. We need to feed our dogs, unlike in the horses where you have owners that are generally paying a training fee per week. And I'm not for a minute suggesting that the owners aren't coming into hardships as well. But with the greyhounds, basically we work on a 50-50 ratio with the stake money. So if your dog isn't earning anything, well, there's nothing coming in, and it's up to the trainers to be paying for those greyhounds weekly. So we all know how crucial it is to comply. And look, they've brought in so many new measures that people have just been... I know at times it's a little bit difficult, particularly for some of the older participants, and there's a couple of things that are a little bit contentious, but we all know that we have to do this. There's no ifs and buts, because we could possibly be able to continue an everyday racing, we're just very grateful for. I think everyone holistically realises that we have to make these measures and we have to comply by them if we're going to have any chance of continuing for the next day and for the next week, and potentially maybe not have the shutdown that has happened in New Zealand.
Okay, guys. AJC Derby, one of the four big races today. It's got an unbelievable history. But another part of the history of it was a maiden winning it by the name of Ethiopia, winning the AJC Derby at not as long odds as you might think for a maiden. But it was a monumental moment in the career of trainer Pat Carey, Ethiopia, and the Derby of 2012.
Strike the Stars gets off the fence. And then in behind them, next we've got Laser Hawk, who looks to be labouring a little. He's trying to pick up the bit now. It's Sangster in front from Satirical Boy. Now Laser Hawk getting his mind on the job. Strike the Stars coming through in the centre. Ethiopia's right down the outside. Polish Knight got the inside run. Polish Knight took the lead. Ethiopia's challenging out wide. Polish Knight and Ethiopia, they go to the line. Ethiopia won the derby. Ethiopia beat Polish Knight and Laser Hawk. Then came Strike the Stars.
Ethiopia winning the derby. I reckon there'd be a few words that would be sitting pretty proudly at the forefront of trainer Pat Carey's mind. Pat joins us this morning. Matty Stewart's with me. Pat, a moment that probably still feels like it's yesterday.
It was a fantastic day. It was a fantastic win. And, glad to be here with you guys to talk about it.
It was just a case of peaking on the day, wasn't it? He never won another race, Ethiopia, which was interesting because on the day he was just explosive, Paddy, wasn't he? I know Silent Achiever, the great Kiwi filly, was out the back and she was in the market. The Waller favourite, Laser, whatever it was, it's a long time ago. Yeah. Laser Hawk, I think it was. And then Hawksy, you denied Hawksy as well. He ran second. But on the day, he just had a lot of clear air, pulled him out, and it must have been an amazing sight, that last 300 metres when you were there.
It was an extraordinary effort, right, given that it was his fourth start in a race, right? He hadn't raced for a month. He hadn't raced since the Alistair Clark, where I thought he was finished behind one of Purdy Moody's. I think it was called Highly Recommended or something like that. But we were going to run him in the Roseville Guineas. He was an emergency, never got a run. Didn't really worry me. We sort of earmarked, we had a preparation mapped out for him, albeit in one prep. And he'd never raced until the January. And, you know, it was just extraordinary. The way he won it, you know, he came from last at the half mile. It was a brilliant win. And a really good ride from Rhys McLeod, who resisted temptations to go forward early in the race and ride the horse to in the true manner in which a stayer can be ridden.
That was only his fourth start, Pat. It was the Sail Maiden. Then there was the Group 2 Autumn Stakes. Then the Alistair Clark, which it was the eye-catching run that must have made you feel confident that he'd go super. His fourth start, he wins the Derby.
Yeah, look, I tell you what, we knew we were on the right track. I mean, his second start was in the Autumn Classic, and he was a huge run that day. And we sort of knew we were on the right pathway to go forward to the Derby. So where we were lucky, we were able to use Sandown Racecourse. As Sandown gets opened up for gallops, and he had a really good workmate in a horse called Durnford, and we were able to get the right work into the horse. You know, I'm of the opinion that, you know, the base of work is actually more important than the race experience when you get over a trip.
I was going to ask you about that, Paddy. Like, I know a lot of trainers, Danny O'Brien's certainly one, and Mick Kent and others, where they do a lot of scientific measures of fitness and so on, and I'm not sure whether you're more still the eye or the technology, but to be confident of having a four-start horse ready to run and win a derby on such a light preparation. What gave you the confidence that he could run it out and win it?
Okay, it's really interesting you bring up, because, look, I ran him in a trial early on, and it was only an 800-metre trial or a 900-metre trial over at Cranbourne, and Ben Malham rode him for some reason, and Ben said he finished, might have got beaten 8 lengths, but went okay. And Bender said, I don't know if this horse is any good or not, but he feels really good, you know. And subsequent, you know, all the work we did at home kept sort of, you know, identifying or reinforcing what Ben said. But I reckon I was one of the first guys to start using in racing the E-Tracker product, which was developed by Andrew Stewart. And you know, the facts that we were, the information we were getting back off, you know, heart rate measurements and speed in the horse and ability to recover, you know, told us that told the tale more than anything of what type of horse we were dealing with, because we had a couple of good yardsticks at the time. The year before, Cedarberg had won the BMW. We'd had Arapahoe Miss come through the stable. She won the Oaks back in 2008. We were doing some lactate testing at the time. And you know what? You can't ignore what science is providing for you. And, you know, the facts and the measures that we were getting off the recovery and the ability to, you know, maintain his heart rate was extraordinary. But the real test for the horse was, whilst most of the hard work was done on the Tuesday morning before the Derby, I worked him on the Kensington track at, and I worked him over a really solid mile with a horse called Sabraja Michael Moroney. And, you know, they worked a real solid mile, and they broke a minute coming home the last 1,000. And, you know, that's extraordinary work, track work. And the recovery on him was fantastic. And then I downloaded all the information I needed from my e-tracker blanket. And I went to Kevin Moses's, and I was nearly blown away when I saw what I said. When I saw the information that was coming off the e-tracker, and I said to Kevin Moses, I said, there, Kev, leave that on your machine. Leave that on your computer for as long as you like. I said, that'll be the benchmark for winning an AJC Derby. And Kevin Moses, who we all know is a great jockey, great Australian jockey and a really good guy with it, he come bursting through the pack after the Derby. He says, I had 100 on him. I had 100 on him. That was fantastic. But
Paddy, just before we let you go, because the clock's running, unfortunately, but just the backstory, obviously, Trevor Delroy, son of Hellenus, a product of Western Australia. But how is it that he never won another race?
Well, it's not fair to the horse. I mean, the horse did run fourth in the Cox Plate and was ridden probably contrary to probably what was best to his best for him. I mean, Ocean Park beat Piero All Too Hard. Not a bad bunch of horses, right? And he ran fourth, wasn't beaten far. Run seventh in a Melbourne Cup after getting bowled over by a horse that fell in the race and got to the front. Was forced to go a long way earlier than when the horse interfered with him, and he just took off seven from home. He couldn't hold him anymore. So, you know, the horse was a really good horse. Don't worry about that.
Pat, you've got a horse at the moment who eerily has got a record that's not dissimilar to Ethiopia. Hasn't won a Group 1, of course, but has run well in them. Stars of Karam, 21 starts, one win. Is there something in that for Caulfield today?
Look, the horse was excellent in the Mornington Cup the other day. He's been extremely... Look, he was bought by Robbie. Robbie Lang bought him with his good eye, took him to the Derby, run second, won the Vase. He handed over to another good trainer in Mick Kent. So I've been the recipient. Two really gun young trainers at Stayers. Well, not young, but they're not babies.
Young!
But they are gun trainers at Stayers, those two. And I've just been the recipient of getting a horse. So, you know, I'm lucky to get the horse off those two guys. He did have an injury after his Queensland campaign last year. But all the signs are he's come back good, and he can only improve after his Mornington Cup win, in my opinion. Mornington Cup fourth the other day. You know, he just probably peaked on his run after looking a chance on the corner.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for your time today. Good luck with Stars of Karam going forward, and we hope we brought a smile to your face reliving that great moment with Ethiopia.
Yeah, could listen to it all day long.
Well, Matt, if I said to you, what's the common denominator between Octagonal and Casbah Kid, a pacer who won at Melton last Saturday night? This is him winning. You can have a bit of a think while you listen to this. The run's coming up now for Casbah Kid. It's 40 Thieves, Born to Rock and Roll. Casbah Kid the inside. It's 40 Thieves tackled by Casbah Kid. Casbah Kid going through the stronger. Casbah Kid wins it. Casbah Kid first has beaten 40 Thieves, Warden. Got into third from Born to Rock and Roll. Octagonal, Casbah Kid, Matt.
Couldn't possibly be a connection that I could think of other than they've both got four legs and a tail.
Well, I can let our listeners know that there is a Hall of Fame thoroughbred trainer that is a part owner of Casbah Kid. He never misses a run. He's as passionate about the harness racing as he is the other code, of which he has trained horses like Fumicino, Align, Viscount, Brutal, Over, Chautauqua, and of course I speak of the Hall of Famer thoroughbred trainer in John Hawkes, who's kind enough to join us on Cracking the Codes this morning. How are you, Hawksy?
Well, thanks, Dan, Matty.
Hey, Hawksy.
Does that put a smile on your face when your Casbar kid winning, or I suppose winning anywhere, but winning at Melton?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, it's with some really nice people, and I've always had a passion for the trots. I used to go to Waveville, you know, when I was about 15 or 16, and, you know, going back to Grimmel and those sort of horses, you know, Arkin and all those sort of horses. So a lot of years ago, but, you know, the Websters, the Butterworths, the whole lot of them. But, no, it was, you know, a great era, and I still really enjoy the paces. So, and, yeah, lucky enough to have one that, you know, got a bit of ability.
Is it a nice distraction for you, John? I know that all energy and professionalism is channeled towards the training of your great thoroughbreds. Is the harness a time where you can just suspend everything and just kick back on the couch and enjoy it for the basics of what it is?
Yeah, well, you know, we work long hours, you know, with the horses. And, you know, it's just, I mean, my two passions have always been AFL football and, you know, the paces. And as I said, it goes back to when I was a young fella in Adelaide. So, you know, as I said, we've got that one. We bought another young one this year, you know, just with some good people. And, look, it's just to have a bit of a something on the outside of racing. I think we all need something just that little bit different. I mean, it's, I just love to be able to, you know, switch off and just watch the race and watch the replay two or three times. And, it's just a distraction, as I said. So, and at this point in time where the way things are at present, yeah, it's even better.
Just one more, Dan, before I know you'll chip in, but just one more, just off the back of that. Hawksy, are you as big a driver bagger as you are a jockey bagger?
No, definitely not. No, actually, the young blokes that have drove him really well. Actually, they drove him better than Greg Sugar, so he drove him a couple of times pretty bloody ordinary. So, but no, not really, mate. I mean, look, I leave everything. I don't look. He rings me, you know, when the horse is in. It's about as far as it goes, you know, just, you know, an hour or so before he races. And, mate, I don't interfere. He knows what he's doing, Jeff. And as I said, I mean, I don't like, you know, we think we're professional. We don't want people ringing us every day of the week. So I certainly don't want to be ringing him at any particular time either. So, yeah, you know, he's got a job to do. And if it goes good, he'll continue on. If it's no good, he'll tell us and we'll get rid of it.
Jeff Webster, of course, is the trainer of the horse. One of the great drivers as well, but he's taken a bit of a back seat from driving, and I wonder if that might have had something to do with you, John, because I guess the old line is, if you're a trainer driver and you drive badly, they take the horse off you. If you're a trainer and someone else drives it, you just merely replace the driver.
Yeah, look, I'm not that bad. Yes, I used to blow up a little bit in the younger days, but the only thing is, Meadie used to forget I used to wrap them up when they rode them well too, which nobody really wanted to take any notice of that. So it wasn't all bad. It's just, sometimes you get tagged, but it didn't really particularly worry me. But if you spoke to most of the jockeys, they'd tell you I'd wrap them up as much as I'd go crook at them.
John, you're a great admirer of the horse, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's a standard bred or a thoroughbred. And you, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember, I think Christian Cullen and Octagonal were running at about the same time, and I know you were a great admirer of Christian Cullen, and I think you said at the time that even across both codes that you don't think you've seen a better horse than Christian Cullen?
No, he's perhaps one of the best. You know, I've seen it that I go back. Well, Grimmel was perhaps one of the best trotter, you know, I've ever seen, where he used to... He used to virtually give him a lap start at Waveville and still beat him. But you know, going back to Arkin and those sort of horses, but Christian Cullen, he's just a unbelievable horse in my opinion, and just an absolute, you know, spectacular athlete. And look, you know, even in any code, but even in our code, anybody that's got a good horse, it's great for racing, and if you've got a good horse, it's great for the pacing. So, you know, yes, we'd love to have, you know, all the good ones. It doesn't work that way, but it's just great to see a good horse in either code. And as I said, you know, it makes the code. And as I said, I enjoy watching it, just like watching Winx and those sort of horses. I mean, you'd love to have them, but, you know, it's not the end of the world because it's just fantastic to see those type of horses.
When Christian Cullen was going around, of course, same sire as Courage Under Fire by In the Pocket, there was a lot of the Flemington trainers would come up to me and wanted to go out and watch Courage Under Fire at Moonee Valley. I remember getting tickets for lots of stables, a Hawksy. You went another step after that. You end up getting involved with a full brother to Courage Under Fire called Advance Attack, who won a lot of country cups.
Yeah, we did. You know, a lot of our, you know, I put some friends together and, yeah, he was, you know, well, he's a full brother, but, he was, you know, well above average horse and, you know, he's unlucky, he never won a, you know, Queensland Derby, but, you know, he was a, you know, pretty handy darn horse. I mean, we bought him out of New Zealand. So, yeah, look, over a period of time, I've really enjoyed the racing, the pacing, and we had a little bit of luck. We haven't had heaps, but it's just, as I've got older, it's just a passion I've enjoyed a little bit more, being able to have that on the side.
Hey, John, one thing that Dan and I talked to harness, and Simone, we talked to harness people about is how the horses have become faster and faster with each generation, particularly the trotters with the AI and the tapping into American pedigrees and so on. And even the popular arms and Christian Cullens and going way back to the Paleface Adioses, they would not be as fast as the harness horses of today. But the Gallops horses seem to have continued a similar trajectory of speed over the decades.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, Australia, well, pacing and racing, I think they've both gone more for speed now. You know, I mean, we used to go to New Zealand and just buy staying horses. Well, as time went by, they even switched to speed horses. So it's definitely gone more speed. But that's the people of today. They're looking for a quick turnover, you know, and a quick result. I don't know whether it's a real good thing, to be quite honest. I'd still like to see, well, to me, the pacers, they used to be a lot more stamina than what they were. Now they're more speed. And even the gallopers, I think there's more speed than stamina. And that's why a lot of the staying races in the racing ranks are won by the European horses now. But it's the same thing. I bought My Lucky Day in New Zealand many years ago, and I think he was 600,000, I think, at that particular time, you know, which was a lot of money for a yearling. But now they're going to Europe and buying horses for similar money or even a bit more, but they're already proven, and they only have to wait 6 or 12 months and they got a horse racing, whereas you buy a yearling, a staying yearling, you might have to wait 2.5-3 years, which, you know, when you're paying a lot of money for horses, people get a little bit, not frustrated, but they want a result. So I think that's why it's gone more breeding in the racing. The pacing, I'm not quite so sure, but you've only got to look when I, watch the pacing in America, you know, which I do quite often. It's all just mile races. Speed. So in some ways it's good, but I reckon the staying races are fantastic myself, whether it be pacing or racing. You know, there's a bit more time to watch the race, to work through it, whereas the, you know, the sprint races, bing, bang, they're over, you get a check and they're all over. So there's for and against, but I definitely think, in some ways it hasn't changed for the better.
You spent up a bit at the Magic Million sales this year, John, or probably every year, but particularly this year. But I think at the end of the sales, I think Casbah Kid had won on one of those days as well, which might have been the highlight of you spending about $11.8 million. You won a $15,000 harness race as well.
Ah, well, no, I made time to, you know, to sort of watch it, which, yeah, oh, well, it didn't affect how I bought, you know, how we bought yearlings, but I still, no, look, it's a thrill. I mean, it's the same as in anybody that wins a race, until they've actually won it, there's a certain thrill that it's hard to explain sometimes, and you see an owner win a maiden at Hawkesbury, well, you know, to me, that's as important as winning a Group 1 at Randwick,
yeah.
Because to a lot of owners, that is their Group 1, because they never perhaps get the opportunity to, well, have a Group 1 horse. So I think, you know, as I've always, you know, said to my owners, enjoy every win, because there's more losers than there is winners. And the same as, yeah, we've had a good run with Casbar Kid, but we had a couple of others. Believe you me, they were bloody slow, and we got rid of them pretty quick. So, you know, as I said, so look, money doesn't make them go quick. You know, there's a lot of well-bred horses that you pay a lot of money for. Unfortunately, they don't make race horses, and I'm sure that even though the trotting field, they're not as expensive. You know, you pay $150 for a pacer. That's a lot of money for what they're racing for. So, but then I'm sure there's some slow ones in both sides of the fence. But from our perspective, the biggest problem you have in racing today is really injuries. And a lot of people just don't like to geld colts anymore now. And that's a little bit of a problem, because a lot of the colts, they start thinking of other things and they don't focus on being a racehorse, and by the time people do decide to geld them, it's too late, and then they've already fried in the brain, and then you've lost the horse. So, but over the last few years, a lot of our owners now, if they don't perform up to where we think, they're happy to geld them, and we're making racehorses of them, which in turn suits us, and then some get sold to Hong Kong. So there's always another market if they geld them, but we lose a lot of horses each season because, you know, certain colts, they just don't want to be racehorses. So it's just something that, well, you just got to put up with.
Hey, John, we'll talk about your amazing success at the Randwick Carnival in a second. I know Dan's got some replays to rekindle some memories, and it's sort of like an oasis in the desert now, the Saturday racing, to distract us from the C word, the coronavirus. So just your own personal experience with it at the moment, how are you finding life at the moment in the world of coronavirus?
No, I think frustrating is a good word. You know, I mean, all our staff and that, you know, we reiterate to them every day, look, try and be careful, as I said, because we want to try and keep the industry going, because if we can keep the industry going and come out the other side, we're all going to be better off. Whereas if it all of a sudden comes bingo, well, then no racing, no track work, they're out of jobs, the owners won't be able to pay their bills. So it's just a very tense time at this point in time, and like, everybody's doing their best, but naturally sometimes it's not someone's fault, something can go wrong. But as we know in the world, there's a lot of people do funny things and stupid things which they shouldn't do. So it's just a real frustrating time. We're hoping that, you know, the pendulum will start to slow down a little bit, and then things might relax just that little bit. Not that you can completely relax, but we've just got to be on top of it. We went through the EI, which was a little bit different, but in a lot of ways it was the same way. But naturally, this is a bigger thing because it's actually people, not horses. And naturally, you'll always put people in front of horses as far as that goes. But look, you know, I think frustrating is the word, but we're lucky we can continue on. We're not really a contact sport, whereas all the other sports, and people have to fly around Australia, whereas racing can continue in each state with all the protocols and the way they put it in place. So, and it does give something for people to watch, you know, on television, and have a bet occasionally. I mean, all right, there's a lot of people that don't like betting, but there's a lot of people that like the entertainment. So if we can continue on, we're still putting on something for a lot of people. And in some ways, who knows, we might attract some new people for the industry down the track.
The stars are out. Big day for Team Hawks. You've had a great history with the day, John. The TJ Smith, which is relatively new. Chautauqua virtually made it his own, winning it three in a row. AJC Sires, Mighty Manitou, Align, of course, Octagonal, Viscount. I mean, some absolute stars. Doncasters, over. Brutal last year. AJC Derby, Head Turner, Fumicino. And this moment, which would have to be one of the great moments, the 1996 AJC Derby.
Nothing like a Dane hit the front up the rise. Palante's the first to go after him. Here comes Saintly with Octagonal down the extreme outside. Out after them now. Palante headed Nothing Like a Dane. Further out Saintly, and here comes the big O. Octagonal with the last run at them. Palante, Saintly and Octagonal. They've come away from Nothing Like a Dane. Saintly and Octagonal. Biedman throwing everything at Octagonal. He gets there. Yes, Octagonal wins the derby. Octagonal again by a neck to Saintly. Palante third. Royson
wow.
fourth.
Wasn't just winning the AJC Derby, but the horses that he's stopped from winning an AJC Derby. You wouldn't get sick of listening to that and the talent that was behind him. Probably the strongest field that I could recall, and perhaps you, John?
I still get goosebumps listening to that race. He was just a superstar in his own right. And as I said, those four horses in their own right were all superstars, and for them all to come together in one particular race, I mean, it doesn't happen a lot in racing. Sometimes there's one, you know, dominant horse in one era, but that was just an unbelievable derby, and to win it, naturally, was, you know, a great thrill. And as I said, I still watch the replays at home sometimes, especially when I'm in a bad mood or things aren't going right, but And
you must watch it a few times then, John.
I do. But it gives you a lift, you know, and as I said, you know what I mean, I've been lucky enough to train a lot of, you know, good horses over a long period of time, and then the latter years with my two sons, you know, I mean, we've been lucky enough to win quite a few Group 1s and a lot of races together. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And as I said, racing, it's been fantastic to me and my family over a long period of time. And we've met so many good people all the way through that have helped me, you know, as I said, from when I started in Adelaide. And, the people that have, the list is so long. So I've always been thankful to, you know, people. And, we've been lucky enough, we've worked hard, but you still need a little bit of luck on your side, and you need a lot of support along the way. We've been lucky enough to get that.
John, just on that crop of three-year-olds, and what we were talking about earlier about the emphasis on speed over stamina now, and all our stayers now seem to be imported horses from Europe, we don't make them like that group anymore, do we? Even down to Falante and Nothing Like a Dane, Saintly, who was a superstar left-handed, we just don't create horses like that anymore as a group.
No, we don't. But as I said, breeding has changed. Everybody is looking for a quick turnaround, whereas in those days, everyone was perhaps a little more patient, if you understand, in that respect. So, look, times change, eras change. As I said, like New Zealand was always known, you'd go there just to buy staying horses as well. They switched, you know, trying to compete with the Australians with the speed horse, which was never going to work, in my opinion. But they had, you know, where they rear them over there, the country is fantastic. But they're slowly, I think, going back to that again. But now the world is such a small place now. And as I said, the European stayers and people find they can buy one there and get it out here in, well, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. I think that's why everyone's looking for a quicker result, and I think that's part of the problem. And as I said, it's all about speed, speed, speed. Well, you don't see many longer races in America, even with the gallopers or the pacers, and even in Australia, like the Derby, they're unbelievable races. But most of the studs would prefer to stand a Golden Slipper winner than what they would an AJC Derby winner. I think, as I said, it's time to change, and maybe it'll turn around again, but I think it's going to be a while. Well, I possibly won't see it in my lifetime, but maybe it will in the future.
John, it's been great having a bit of a trip down memory lane, cross-coding, which is perfect for this show, Cracking the Codes, and we really appreciate you joining us today. Hopefully down the track we might be able to do a preview of a big harness race or gallops race somewhere, and you might be able to join us again.
Just one quick one, Hawksy. I haven't seen Hawksy for a while. I owe him one, Dan. In 1997, Octagonal had a farewell parade at Morfettville on one of the feature races, and I was sitting in the press room, and everyone was giving out pink donuts. Do you remember that, Hawksy? The pink donuts to celebrate the Cerise donuts? Hawksy came in and gave me what's known in the trade as a nipple cripple. And it brought tears to my eyes, and I have been wanting to get back at him ever since. So, mate, just a warning, Hawksy, if you see me coming from 10 paces, you know what my aim is.
Yeah, that's no problems, mate. As I said, I've built up a lot of muscles over a period of time, so I'll be happy to cop it on the boob, as they say.
Maybe after a group one, it won't hurt so much.
No, thanks very much, boys. You know, it's appreciate and your support and all your listeners. Thank you very much.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
Well, we lost another legend of the sport just recently in Joe Hilly. And on Saturday night, I was out at the Meadows and caught up with Terry Reid, who we'll all remember as the Monkey Man. And Terry was having a chat to me about Joe Hilly and said what a wonderful man he was, a very, very generous person. Although I don't have a real recollection of a conversation with Joe, I certainly knew of some of the dogs that he had trained and it had been very, very successful. But his son Paul, who's joining us this morning on Cracking the Codes, and Paul, I know this is quite a difficult time for you, given that your dad's just recently passed, but hopefully this can provide some comfort when we relive some of the memories of these fantastic dogs. But how are you, Paul, and how's the family at the moment?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Simone, and everyone's holding up well.
Oh, that's good to hear. I know Dad hadn't been well for quite some time, so hopefully this can provide some comfort for you and your mum, Sophie, and the rest of the family moving forward. But Paul, Dad Joe had a terrific career, and probably his most famous greyhound was Tangaloa. We'll get to him shortly, but what do you remember growing up with Dad and his greyhounds?
Oh, just helping out all the time. I used to go and help him walk the dogs at the golf course before school and then have to get back to go to school and, yeah, just help feeding and then later on trialling and doing all the stuff with the dogs. You know, he was pretty good with the dogs.
Obviously, with that background, you would have been a young starter. I mean, when Tangaloa was up and running and become a superstar, as a little boy, you would have been then. I gather there was no turning back after that.
No, I was hooked straight away. Kind of like that. Had a lot of good dogs, so it looked easy, but it's not that easy.
But you've still got greyhounds yourself now in Tasmania, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a few here. We've cut back a bit, gone into pet boarding a little bit. But, yeah, I'll just breed a litter a year and keep them all and break them in and train them myself and go from there.
When you look at some of the greyhounds you had, High Intensity, Dallas Duo, Rich Return, Club Edition, and then Tangaloa, an amazing story with this greyhound. He took out the 1978 Melbourne Cup, but there's quite a backstory to him actually getting to the track, wasn't there?
Yeah, apparently, like, I was young and don't know exactly what happened, but he had five starts for five wins, I think, and Dad put him up the straight track and the lure broke and he hit it and broke his hock. And he got him to the vet at Sandown and the vet said, oh, he smashed it, Joe, he's finished, you know, you've got to put him down. And I said, I'm not putting him down, he goes. So he brought him home and treated him himself and put him in plaster and put him in a yard. And I think 6 weeks, I think he had over 12 months off, and he brought him back 6 weeks before the Melbourne Cup and ended up winning it.
I think he'd entered the series first up, hadn't he? And there was some doubt where he'd actually get a run because he was such a lightly raced greyhound going into that Melbourne Cup series.
I think he was a reserve for the heats, and another legend of the sport, Paul Hogan, rang up the committee or something like that and said that dog should be in the field. And anyway, they changed the fields and they put him in and he ended up winning it.
It was quite a remarkable effort. And I'm sure in these days, Paul, as you could appreciate, there would be a bit of an uproar if someone didn't have a dog drawn and then suddenly someone said, no, we're going to redraw all week.
Yeah, well, like I said, I was a bit young to remember all of it, but I've heard the stories a few times. That apparently, yeah, it was up to Paul Hogan. He was on the committee, I think, and he rang the committee members and said this dog should be in the fields, and so they redrew it and put him in.
Well, how about we relive that moment, the 1978 Melbourne Cup, Tangaloa, he jumped in the red box.
Away they go. Reuben Kane missed the start. First to move out was Tangaloa. He's going quickly with on the outside for Chit and Blast. Tangaloa hunting up along the inside, and Reuben Kane, the favourite, is back. Third last on the fence, and back behind it is Jeff Bank. Going down the back end for Tin and Blast, the boulder got away, led by 4 lengths on Tangaloa. 2 lengths away, third is Riviera Tiger, there followed by Reuben Kane, who's running on quickly, but he's giving the leaders a tidy start. On the home turn, it's Patin and Blast being tackled out wide by Tangaloa, who's getting home hard down the outside, and Tangaloa wins the Melbourne Cup. Tangaloa first, Riviera Tiger second, third home is Reuben Kane. A break then to Jess Bang, there followed...
Paul, do you have any memory of that night? Were you on track with the family?
Yeah, I was, and Bumper Grad, I more remember when he won the Australian Cup. We were as kids and we all had our Tangaloa T-shirts on, and there were some staff members that said, he's the grandpa of the field. They called him because he was 4-year-old and he can't win, and I think he was 33-1, and I think each way for us on him, and he won the Australian Cup. So I remember the Australian Cup more than the Melbourne Cup.
This greyhound, Tangaloa, not just on the track was he a superstar, but he went to stud, stood until he was 15 years old, had 725 matings, and the names I was reading out earlier, he produced Eagle Hawk Star, Rustic Venture, Pretty Short, Tangan, Kid Campbell. Pretty Short went on to produce New Tears, a phenomenal career at stud and on the racetrack.
Yeah, you go back through the breeding, if you can go far enough back, you see him in a lot of the bitches and the dogs that are still going around now. You know, he traces back to a lot of the, you know, superstars that are racing now.
And there was an $80,000 offer for him early on, wasn't there, as well? But the owners knocked that back, which was probably the sensible thing to do, as they realised that he had a good stud career ahead of him. Well, they assumed he would have a good stud career ahead of him.
Yeah, he was one of the top stud dogs at his time. I think there was Tim Lee before him, and then he was probably one of the next best ones in his era. So he was pretty popular at stud.
He sure was. Now, Paul, when I spoke to you yesterday, you said that your sister was the smart one in the family, and she was into banking, whereas the rest of you are into the greyhounds. But what's that funny story about learning fractions at school?
I remember Dad had a racehorse, and I went to Olympic Park one day, and my principal at school was one of a bagman. I think it was for Alf King. And he nearly died when he saw me walk in. And I remember him doing maths with me. And if I couldn't get it, he'd do it in a price, like a 5-2 or 4-1. If you put $10 on it, 4-1, what's the fractions? And that's how he used to teach me my maths. And I remember Dad's horse was racing once, and he called me to the principal's office, and all the kids are going, what'd you do, what'd you do, what'd you do? And when I got in there, Dad's horse was racing at Cranbourne, I think, and he says, Sweet Jamaica's about to race. You want to listen to it with me?
He was a good principal.
Yeah, he was really good. I think he wanted to keep me on his good side because I didn't know if he knew anyone wanted him to know that he was a bagman for a bookmaker.
Oh, right. There was method in his madness. But a terrific story as well. And your mum now... Paul, now what was the greyhound you've got as a pet? Something Vixen.
That's Vixen.
Miss Vixen, that's right. And your mum trained her, and mum hasn't got any dogs anymore?
No, since they've gone to Narrowarrin on an acre, they got rid of all their dogs. So Dad had cat and heaps of birds. He loved his birds. And pigeons, he went back and raised pigeons for a little while when he got rid of the dogs. And when he got a bit sick, he got out of them as well.
We're going to do a story on pigeons coming up, aren't we, Simone? I've learnt just recently there's a pigeon race called the Victoria Cup, and it's got prize money of about $195,000. So we're going to introduce a little pigeon segment, I think, Paul, coming up in the near future on Cracking the Codes. It seems very popular.
Yeah, well, I think Dad and his brother had pigeons in the early days before he had dogs, and I think they won a derby or something when they lived at Richmond. Him and his brother Edwin, who had dogs also, and he passed away recently as well.
Did Dad look back on all these greyhounds in his later years, Paul? Did it give him some comfort, some enjoyment?
Yeah, well, I had a good dog not long ago, Nitro Sandbar, and when Dad was crookie, you know, he loved that dog because he tried his heart out, and yeah, that kept him going for a little while watching him, and he still used to watch the races and, you know, the horses and the trots, and always rang me and said how the dog's going, and so he's always stayed interested right up to the end, so it was good.
And after the Melbourne Cup presentation, I recall, I think it was the owner saying that Dad was sort of the shy one. He didn't like the limelight too much. He let the dogs do the talking.
Yeah, Dad wasn't real good at English and riding and all that kind of stuff. So, because he was, you know, he came from Malta when he was 19 and had to pick up the language and stuff like that. So he kind of stayed away from that kind of it.
Well, he's had made a tremendous impact on, like we've mentioned, the breeding, when you say that there's greyhounds that trace back to Tangalooa that are racing today. And just the memories as well. And Gallus Duo was probably the greyhound that I really remember the most. I remember the names of the others, but Gallus Duo was racing around the time that I just started getting into the dogs, a black and white dog there. And I recall him winning a feature at Wentworth Park, but I just haven't been able to find what that was. Do you know what that was off the top of your head?
I'm not sure, because Dad left him with Jim Coleman at the end of his career because there was no races really here. So it might have been with Jim Coleman, but he won a Ballarat Cup and he ran second to Master Giant in the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, right. Okay, well, he's been another terrific performer as well. Look, Paul, it's been wonderful having a chat to you and just reliving some of the memories of your late dad, Joe. I'm sure that there's plenty to look back on with the family, and wishing you and your mum and the rest of the family all the very best moving forward. Thanks for joining us on Cracking the Codes this morning.
All right, thanks, Simone. Thanks, Dan.
All right, guys, covered a lot of ground this morning. It was very enjoyable. Thank you, Simone. Thank you, Matt.
Good on you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Look forward to next week. And as we go out, there's only a handful of songs that have been performed named after great racehorses. And here's one on the Gundawindi Grey Gunsin. Have a great week.
Cheered him from the grandstand and we cheered him from the flat. We've cheered a little beauty, a real aristocrat. He's never thrown the towel in, but a tryer all the way. A horse we're really proud of, the Gundawindi Grey.